The Juvenile Diabetes Research Foundation is an international organization that funds critical research for treatment and ultimately a cure for type 1 diabetes. Type 1 diabetes is a life-threatening autoimmune disease that strikes both children and adults and changes life as they know it forever. It cannot be prevented, and there is no cure, at least not yet. The 200-plus mile Reach the Beach Relay, comprised of four teams and 48 runners, will race across New Hampshire from the White Mountains to Hampton Beach over two non-stop days to raise money for JDRF and to help improve lives and ultimately find a cure. Please join us and help support our mission to raise money for JDRF and make a meaningful difference in the treatment and cure for type 1 diabetes. To donate, go to www.team.jdrf.org or go to abovethebasement.com and click on the link on the charitable causes page. This is Chuck Clough from Above the Basement, Boston Music and Conversation. You just heard a song called Not About You by David G. Moore from his recent album High Tide Adventures. Also known across the pond as Malin, David is a prolific singer and songwriter, and he is the talented lead guitarist in our band, The Butler Frogs. Ron and I are proud to call David our friend, and we can't say enough about his talents. We had a nice conversation where we talked about his history and thoughts on recording, and we were fortunate to have him play a song at the end of our conversation from his earlier album, Never the First to Jump, called Goodbye Before the Sun. So here is our conversation with David, recorded at an undisclosed location in Concord, Massachusetts.
This is a very frog-like atmosphere.
It is.
So
it is frog-like because we had David G. Moore, who was the lead guitarist, singer, songwriter extraordinaire, with us. This is going to be a little different from the interview we had in Ireland when they had that one guy, had the mic, and he had like four of the guys in the room about 10 feet away. Was it Ireland or England? I thought it was in Ireland.
Which one?
Well, which one?
Oh, the radio.
How many have you been on? The one on the radio.
That you listened in on?
It was Scott.
Yeah.
Was it Scotland?
When he wasn't sure if it was Malin or Marlin. Yeah, that was good. It was awesome because only one guy had the mic, and there, he does like three or four guys just sitting around
heckling from behind.
Yeah, but they were part of the conversation. You could hear them kind of in the background asking questions.
Timmy would have loved that one mic.
One mic.
Oh, yeah. Everybody gather around one mic.
It's right up at Timmy's alley.
Well, hi, Dave.
We're not here to talk about that. We're talking here to talk to David G. Moore.
Give me five, David G. Moore,
also known as Malin. So, how you doing, David?
I'm doing great.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thanks for being here.
I'm just selling into this. I think you guys know way too much about me.
We do. But you know what? But we're going to pretend we don't know anything about you. And I'm going to turn your mic up a little more because you keep on moving away from it.
Well, it's just so I can jump in and surprise you.
There you go. Just don't scream all of a sudden.
Oh, I love that voice. Dave's back.
I know. This little Irish voice.
It's like right a
gig. Very sexy. Well, it's not little. I'm sorry. Not little. It's very bold and masculine.
Masculine was the word I was looking for.
Yeah. Right. So how you doing, man?
Good.
Yeah?
Good.
How's your summer going?
It's going very well.
We've been kind of off the map as far as the frogs are concerned to a certain extent this summer.
Actually, my brother-in-law is here tonight.
That's right.
He and I went out and played last Tuesday.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You played the open mic?
We did a twofer.
Nice. Yeah. Where'd you do it?
Well.
At Main Streets?
Yeah, we went to Main Streets.
Oh, yeah.
You guys went around, and we got a lot of hassle for playing so many private parties with the frogs. There's demand out there for the frogs. People want to see the frogs.
Well, you know, you got to leave them wanting. Right?
So we got to come back strong.
Private always sounds kind of nice, you know.
Sounds expensive.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know. Yeah, so
welcome to Mystery. Hello, Shlomi, by the way.
That's right. We have David's brother-in-law is visiting from Tel Aviv, and we're glad to have you on. He's a pretty good guitar player, too.
Oh, I heard him the other day.
Well, he played with us. I was there with you.
I was there. I heard him the other day.
God, I hate you.
Yeah.
So I want to start off by saying, how we know you. And it started off with kind of what you brought up before, which is the Main Street Market.
That's place. Where we first met, right?
Yeah, that's where we first met. Yeah, you came in there with your album.
Yeah, and I remember Chuck was there before. So I came maybe a year later in 2010, I think.
Always late to the party.
Right. Yeah. I remember meeting Chuck with his guitar and thinking about, wow, you can actually go up and do a couple songs. And, I had never done an open mic before. When Dave, I remember, came and played a song a few weeks after I met Chuck, I remember you playing Goodbye Before the Sun. And I remember that there were people in the audience that were singing, hey, da 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 da. And, pretty good backup, I know.
That was uncanny how exact it was.
But I was like, who is this guy and how do people know his songs? And anyway, it was a revelation.
So that's where the Butler Frogs were born.
Well, not quite. Well, seeded, conceived, perhaps.
Okay. Well, okay.
Because it was then I was playing with Tim, and then Tim and I picked up a drummer for a while.
God, I have these awful images of conceiving.
And we were a trio. And then wanted to start playing as Chuck Clapp.
Right. And I got Greg Mara.
And we did
Mara.
A couple of gigs.
No, I got Timmy first. Yes. Tim Feeler.
Wait, what are you talking about playing as Chuck Clapp? Chuck Clapp and the Butler Frogs?
No. This is just Chuck Clapp.
So
Clark
I was
solo.
Doing David G. Moore originals plus a cover set. And then we pretty much came to Boston area at the same time. Oh, no, actually, no. We started playing out at the same time, 2010-ish, right?
Yeah.
You asked me to play with you. And then I guess it was you, me, Timmy, plus Mike or plus Greg. And then you were booking gigs and I was booking gigs. It's two different, essentially two different acts. Right. And then Chuck,
because I remember. Still doing that.
Well, as I remember, then Chuck said, hey, I think I'm going to call it Chuck Clout and the Butler Frogs.
Right.
And I thought, that's kind of fun. I would get to be in a band. I think I might have been playing in Nourish 2 weeks later. And I said, hey, do you mind if I call it like Dave Moore and the Butler Frogs?
Yeah.
And Chuck's like, oh, great. Yeah. I didn't get to be in the band the last time.
So that's right. That's so kind we kind of switched that up.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, so that's where we started. And so maybe it wasn't necessarily born there, but certainly the seeds were sown. But you had a pretty prolific career before you got up here. You're from Ireland, and you're from, begins with an L.
Lisburn.
I want to say Lisbon, but it wasn't Lisbon. It was Lisburn.
Northern Ireland.
It used to be called Lisnagarvey.
It used to be called what?
Lisnagarvey. And then it burned down, I think.
And that's why they call it Lisburn?
Is there a joke in there?
No,
that's not funny at all.
People died.
That's actually terrible.
It was a tragedy.
This is like dark humor podcast today. When did you come over to the States?
In 96.
In 96?
Yep.
Okay.
Michigan.
Oh, you went to Michigan first?
Yes.
And when did you go to D.C.?
I went to London, Dallas, then D.C.
But was that your music? Was
no,
in D.C.?
So day job. And I actually met a singer-songwriter called Carolyn Fisher at Michigan. And we actually began playing out in bars in Ann Arbor, Michigan.
Huh.
But actually, for an American, and I had obviously a bunch of European-style songs, and we're still having this problem today, right? You will think of a song to play, and I won't know it, and you guys will, or vice versa, because they just were big hits of bands we both know, but, different continents, different hits. And she and I had such a big overlap. We went back to that same open mic, did a couple of songs together. And then they said, let you guys take the gig. And they stopped the open mic and we became the gig.
Oh, so really?
It was kind of an informal one. It wasn't as established as the ones here, but it was kind of funny. We then played, I think, on Thursday nights in a bar in Ann Arbor. It was really good fun.
Do you have any recordings of that?
Not there. I had a choice to stay in the U.S. with the day job. She's now working in a nonprofit in D.C., at Old Town Alexandria, just south of D.C.
Near D.C.
Fantastic scene, and we have recordings of that.
And then when Jonas say, how did you meet them?
So Carol and I, we were playing in a bar on the main street in Alexandria, and we finished, I think, at 11 o'clock, and we walked around the corner to another bar. There was a singer-songwriter. And we went in there, and I don't know if this all seems to come into one memory. And I remember hearing this song being very familiar and liking it a lot. And then when I sort of unwound all that later on, I realized it was a Matchbox 20 song, which I like all their songs and all their writing. But the weird thing was, Justin was singing it. It was almost like that was the version I would have bought in a heartbeat because I just, you know, it was the first person I'd ever met. Yeah. And it was the first person I think I'd ever met that was like totally just drawn in to a performance in a bar. And I was just like, we've just been playing in a corner with nobody caring. And we walk around here and this guy by himself is just holding the whole bar together. And it's just, I was blown away because his sound was great and his voice was great. And
so
the version
Justin,
of the song.
To remind us, is the Justin he started Jonasse.
Yeah. And I think, in fact, Justin was, he was looking for something that wasn't Justin. And he came up with Jonasse as a sort of concept for a band and he'd some songs together. So then, and then he and I then, I just felt totally drawn in and just started coming and playing with him all the time. So that gig evolved into a duo.
And so, but that, you guys had some serious traction in there. You were opening for...
Well, so he, at the time, the band was, they already had their first EP out. It was...
Oh, he was solo in those gigs, you heard him, so he still had the band going on.
Exactly.
And you joined
the band. And they were just beginning to get, you know, some radio play and things were happening, but nobody else in the band sang. And he didn't play electric guitar. He played acoustic and some stuff. So there was a natural gap there for me to come in, basically as the second electric guitar player and the backup vocalist. So we just did so many gigs together. And then I think it might have been 6 months or something like that. He said, you know, do you want to join the band? And I had seen the band, I think, just once or twice. And then, we did a couple of practices. And I think my first gig was in east out of D.C. Is it Annapolis, Maryland? And it was a small bar. One of those musical quotes you just will always live with, the lead guitarist Mark Williams, he had his amp up against the wall and it was this tiny restaurant bar and there was a fish tank in the wall. And the bar manager that night was really frustrated, annoyed by the thing, because your amp is bothering my fish. That's just a great...
You don't hear that line every
day. You just don't hear that every day. Yeah. And I was like, that is a classic. It's so cool. And that was my first gig with Jonasse. My second gig with Jonasse was opening for Vertical Horizon in South Carolina.
Big,
so it was just unbelievable. You know, going from like a bar of, you know, 30 people to like suddenly they were like Vertical Horizon, such great fans. It's like, you know, 700 people already packed in against the fence.
You went from annoying some fish to a huge
exactly.
fan base. How did that happen? How did that jump happen?
And I'm just like, well, that was just, you know, when you're at that level and you're getting to open. They had, you know, relationships with Vertical Horizon. Mark, our lead guitar player, was friend of Matt Scannell of Vertical Horizon, and that's just like Jonasse was playing gigs, and of course you take the gig with the fish tank and then you take the opener for Vertical Horizon, hopefully sell some product along the way. And
yeah, but you also went open for Hootie.
That I think was about a year later.
Okay.
And it was just awesome experience, because then Vertical played and they played.
That's awesome. The thing is, you get your chops that way and you become more of a perfectionist, you know. You obviously learned how to be in a band even before that, yes, but sort of in a band like how we play. This was more of a, there's a demand for you to be meticulous.
And what was, there's a couple of things you touch on there, because one of the things with all three of us, when we play together, all three of us individually have our own record with us own singing the lead vocal. At the time, even when I was playing in a duo with Justin or playing in the band, there would be things he'd say, or I could sense something wasn't right. And then, of course, now, years later, I realize it's like, oh, we were kind of musicians in the band. We weren't leaving a gap for the lead vocal.
Yeah.
Because it's all about the lead vocal and always should be. And it's like sometimes you're in your own zone and you're playing and there's a change of practice and maybe you've changed the way you're doing one of the songs. You want to get that right. And you're actually forgetting the most important part of the song. And I think all three of us do that pretty well together. I almost like would want to go back and sometimes relive some of those moments, because as much as I love playing with those guys, it's like I know I could go back and do things better and differently and more serving the band and serving the songs. But that particular show, I remember that Mark's pedal board crapped out and I stepped in and did part, not as well as Mark, but did his solo and just sort of stepped in and filled in that gap. And Justin was like, oh, it's kind of cool to have, you know, to know that like, if the lead guitar, his pedal board just totally craps out, then, you know, we've got sort of depth in the band now.
Did you short circuit on purpose the pedal board?
You know how you crackle your cables are, Rob.
You took a little bit of water and you're like, when he wasn't looking.
Well.
So why did Jonasse?
Mark Williams, who's now a producer in D.C., He was in the band with Justin, lead singer, principal songwriter. And along the way, we picked up a bass player, Michael Alban, who we'll probably touch on later on. He was a very good connection and friend into some later projects. And then the drummer, Mike Leach, who is now a sound guy. So that was the kind of five of Jonasay at the time. My day job finished, and my only way of staying in the US was having a job. So pretty much the last feasible job was up here in Massachusetts. So we had basically a deal put in front of us, and the guys in Hootie were very supportive, and they really wanted to reach back and bring other bands up, and they formed a record company, Breaking Records, I think it was. Mm-hmm. And I had started getting educated and reading all these books on, you know, the music industry and everything you want to know about the music industry, what a deal is, how it's structured, and what mm-hmm. kind of terms and conditions they might be. I remember looking at this deal, and it was almost textbook from this book, and the Don Passman, Everything You Want to Know About the Music Business book, fantastic book. But in that, it was like, here's the terms and conditions that you might have for a deal. It's a major label, and back in the day when they maybe gave out $200,000 as a recording budget or something. But this was nothing near that, and it seemed to have all the heavyweight terms and conditions, but there was no fund and no budget there. The A&R guy was kind of like, well, we'll try this, we'll do that. And it just didn't seem to be a plan. It's almost like I would go with no money with the right A&R guy who is just dying to get going, or, you know, more money and maybe the same A&R guy. And I just didn't feel it was worth giving up the day job and trying to get a visa sorted. So at the time, I think Mike, our drummer, was working for AOL. I think he and I said, you know, we could basically hustle up some cash to fund a record rather than taking this money and being under contract. Right. So at the time, that's when I decided to move up here. And then being employed and being up here, I could afford to fly back, and I could fly down and meet them for those shows. And then over time, you know, I could meet them at the weekends because it was the day of the internet. Every Thursday, the cheap flights would come out on the internet. Oh, yeah. And you could just go and, you know, meet them where the gig was, fly in with a guitar, and they could throw a spare amp in.
So how long did you do that?
I think about 6 months. But then, of course, the band can't grow when you can't practice. We used to practice every Tuesday night up in, somewhere in Maryland, up in...
That's interesting. I mean, that's an interesting way to break up. Usually it's just because I don't like...
It was all business. We sort of had a conference call and and said, you know, we can't move on. I said, look, it's killing me flying back on the hope that we'll get somewhere, and I don't want to hold them back from moving on. So they actually did then, a few months later, quit the day jobs and did a great record, Spare Dimes for Dust.
Did they break up?
I'm guessing maybe late 2001 or 2002. Oh, okay. Yeah. Right, they played with Kansas along the way, and the members of Kansas fell in love with the band. They have another project. It's if you take one member out of Kansas, they've got a Native Window or Black Window. I forget the name of the project, but they covered a Jonasay song.
Really?
All the members of Kansas but one, and they recorded it and put
that's
it out.
Crazy.
So the songs are on a Kansas record somewhere, or Native Window, whatever. I forget the name.
I just saw not too long ago a really great Kansas
documentary.
I can't remember what it was called, but it was interesting. So you moved into Boston with the Butler Frogs in your eye.
With the butterflies in my eyes. Right. So, yeah, and again, so I felt that I got like a education. Even before Jonasay went, they put out this amazing, amazing record in 2000. But seeing all the sort of elements of that come together and not feeling I was writing at that level, I was like, I got to give this a go. And I had a song, Round the Bend, that we'd played. And that was my contribution into the Jonasay mixes, 100% one I brought in. My singer-songwriter, you know, chops beginning to work in that environment. And having never really, you know, led and sung in front of the band, I was up here. And ironically, I didn't know any musicians. I played here and there with some people. You know, I imagined, hey, I'm arriving in Boston, I'm going to go out and find someone just like Justin, who's out there playing in bars and singing and doing that stuff. And it just didn't happen the same way. So I thought, you know, it's my time to start getting...
You found yourself.
Find myself. What a good read, Ron. What a good read.
So it really kind of was the impetus for you to put out your first solo album, which was
Never the First to Jump. Yeah. And then as I was doing that, I didn't have a name, but I knew I wanted to do something. And it had been some years. Jonasay had broken up, and I had been in Boston a number of years. I didn't have a sort of set of go-to musicians. And I thought, wouldn't it be fun to have all the guys come up and we'd record an album together. It'd be kind of me, my songs with Jonas A, because I like the sound of us all playing together. Yeah, and
you know each other.
And then, of course, in the reality is everybody's moved on, they're all doing different things, and, you know, trying to get everyone's calendar together, it didn't work. And Mike Leach, actually, who was our drummer, he was close to, or maybe at that stage, he's doing front of house sound for Sean Lennon. So he's off, you know, touring with him and a bunch of other fairly serious projects. So it would have been hard to get his calendar. Justin, I think, had gone to California. He was on the West Coast with a guy called Ralph Covert, who's a singer-songwriter of Chicago. Ralph had this children's music project, Ralph's World. So Mike was playing bass for Ralph's World. And he said, oh, and I know this drummer who'd totally be up for your project, and he's just amazing, and he happens to be in the Gin Blossoms.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, oh, now do. he's touring drummer for the Gin Blossoms, John Richardson. And I said, well, that's a core right there. Mike knew some of my stuff anyway, and we'd seen each other over the years. And
that's Mike Albin.
Mike Albin, yep.
Most of it was recorded at Wellspring, right?
Yep.
When I met you, how long was that album?
Maybe just a couple of months.
Yeah. So you had just really kind of finished that album.
Yeah. And again, as I was doing it, you know, it's always a funny thing trying to name it. It almost was a point in my life. I'm like, this has to be called Never the First to Jump, because I wouldn't be doing this if I'd never seen the Jonas A process.
Justin and Jonas,
so
right.
They jump, and I'm like, oh, I could do that.
And the cover of that album, who's in the water already?
Lauren.
Your wife is in the water already. So would you push her off first before you jump?
Oh, I thought it was your brother for some reason.
No.
All right, so you came out with that album, and then played for a while, and then there was a certain point where you wanted to come out with your second album, and then things kind of changed direction for you then.
Yeah, so the first record just kind of sat there, and I think that's when the three of us kind of met. It just, for the three of us meeting, it just put us on the same page, and in a way, different from who each of the three of us would have been had we just been turning up to open mics with some good ideas. And I think just by going through that songwriting process, and Justin and I, back in the Jonas A days, used to have these long conversations, you know, we'd stand in the car park and talk to 2 a.m, but the process, it's all about the boring side of music. It's just project management. You got to start it here, and you got to just go through there, and you got to edit, you got to go back through. And to have gone through that and put out one record and then have done, you know, do another, it's addictive in a way that I thought I would do one and then stop. And then I'm like, oh, that kind of made me better. I had some ideas floating around, and that's where the seeds of that started a few years ago.
But then, so then you went out to, where'd you go? You went to the middle of nowhere in Minnesota to record that one, right?
So Wisconsin.
High Tide Adventures.
Yes. So John Richardson, the drummer from the first record, he just brought, because it's his job, he's like touring and that's great, but he's also an extremely disciplined and very good pop rock drummer and knows what's needed, knows what needs to be done. And I had Rain on Your Skylight, you know, even on the first record, I had that sort of an idea of it. And just to hear that with real drums for the first time, with the fills in the right places, and he just is able to roll in and do it right. So I thought, I'd just love to work with him again and then see where we go. But I almost did an offhand comment. I said to John, I said, hey, I'd love to do another record if you can get me David LaBarriere on bass, who was the bass player, John Mayer's. And I just threw it out there as a kind of, because I listened to those records, and of course John Mayer would have been John Mayer and would have had that career. But to me, just as a musician listening to it, the bass line was driving all those early songs. And, and so musical, so, you know.
Oh, Room for everything. Squares. That
album, right? Yeah. So I just listen to that stuff and thinking, that's fantastic. And John, in his kind of crafty way, gives me a smile and goes, oh, yeah, I saw him down in Nashville a few months ago. I'm like, okay. And, you know, time goes on, and then we're talking on the phone. He goes, oh, you know, I had coffee with him the other day. And then it goes on. Oh, I had dinner with him. I mentioned you wanted to do a record. I'm like, me? And John actually has been developing the studio since 2011-12. He it had pretty much come from being half a barn to being a little complex, and a full control room was in. And it, when I first visited it, I think it was the middle of winter, and you had to keep your feet off the floor. Like if you were sitting in the tracking room, it was so cold.
Oh, yeah.
If you sat there, you know, you're into the music concentrating, and then your feet are just frozen. Like it was in the barn in the winter.
And you were outdoor, right in dead of winter. You were there.
Outdoor toilet, the whole thing, you know, and it was great, great experience. We still laugh about that, but now it's
a magical. Hands,
well, it was just the cold air in a barn, right? Oh, it was this level. The equipment was sort of warmed the top of the room,
yeah.
But there was just that you could never get away from that.
It's good. It's good for the soul. You have to suffer for your
with
art
an outdoor toilet.
I don't know if I could suffer that much.
But so that was like some sort of tracking visits and things like that, and just fleshing ideas out. But then we came back. John put it all together, and he's now got this studio, full professional studio, up and running. And he had some great engineers working there, and we got it together. So basically, John, myself, Dave, and Corey Wong on electric guitars. And Corey Wong's, in fact, when I didn't know who Corey was, I was on YouTube, I think, looking for him. And there he was playing with Stray Cats guy, Brian Setzer. Yeah.
So when did the name change? Which is, I think, an interesting kind of turn for you.
Yeah, yeah. So I never liked David G. Moore. It was just the website that was available. I always wanted to be something else, and I've always preferred being in a band than being a solo artist. And also, when you hear a solo artist, you see a name on the wall, you're expecting plinky plink, you know, beautiful acoustic music, James Taylor stuff. But
so when did you start using your alter ego there?
So that record was out, and I was, you know, like, we're always falling over ourselves as musicians. So that record came out as David G. Moore.
The green one.
The green, yeah. And I liked the idea of having two records with the same artist, so I kind of, there wasn't really a burning reason to change. And I was fooling around with the idea of High Tide Adventures. I kind of came over here on a high tide. I've always felt happy, and, you know, this kind of coming to the US, riding this high tide, and sort of that seemed to fit that collection of songs and as me doing them. And then it's a full band song. It's a full band record. It should be a band. That's just the unsettling thought in my head, was always that. Mm-hmm. We then put together a tour and with another project out of Minnesota, a guy based in Minneapolis where he met a singer from Ireland. So there's this kind of Irish thing beginning to come together. So we put it together, did a little tour around Ireland. And then I've done that. I'd love to be doing that instead as a band. And that sort of convinced me, if I do anything else in music with original music, it's going to be as Malin. And that was the name Malin. I've always liked that through my childhood, because it's technically the piece of water around Northern Ireland. So I like the fact it's around Northern Ireland. It's also Malin Head is the most northerly point of Ireland, which is in the south of Ireland. And I like that as a songwriter. It's the most northerly point is in the south. You're kind of always like, could I work a lyric in that? And it's west of Northern Ireland as well. So just kind of all those compass points, being a body of water, you know, and being part of my childhood, going to those beaches and being in that water was just kind of, it seemed right.
But that's really kind of, that kind of kicked off a lot of promotional stuff. You did you did a music video, which I really liked a lot. Yep. Which song was that one? The one with the kids.
Remember? Not About You.
Yep. Great video. Yeah. I think it's on your site.
That was around like a water fountain, right?
Yes, in Battersea Dogs Park in London.
Right,
Battersea
you just went out there and you played guitar. Yeah. You just played the song and you had the story.
Yeah, so on
kids.
The tour manager is a guy called Steve Hughes. He tour managed that tour we did in Ireland. And he took the records back, loved them, and wanted to work them in the UK. Together, I said, well, this is now going to get radio play, get pushing and all this stuff in the UK. I don't want to kind of be doing it as David G. Moore. I want to actually then switch. So we made the switch then, just talked about the pros and cons of it, and it seemed to fit, you know, and just as when you see Malin, it's a thing, right? It could be a guy.
Yeah, it's a branding thing.
But it's just something to get behind, and it gave me, I think, the flexibility to say I could come here and play as Malin with a duo. Maybe a solo thing, but it never has felt to me like a solo enterprise, even though I'm the one who's put it all together and paid for it all and hired everybody and worked the team. But I've never felt I want to be kind of leading the thing. I always like being part of it when everybody else is kind of digging in the same way as a team.
Well, it reminds me of Iron and Wine and some other, like Beck as well. Beck, I think, is his name.
But Iron and Wine,
it just kind of reminds me of that, where you associate, you know, it's sort of this personification, or you think of a song and you identify with Malin, you identify with Beck, with Iron and Wine, and it's not so much a dude, you know.
Yeah, and then, even like in Passenger, like you see Passenger written, you kind of don't know what you're getting
Passenger.
Into.
Right, another
and,
one.
And I was like, okay, that one's more recent. But then, you know, you go and listen to Counting Crows, like, that's a band, even though it might all be very Adam Duritz-y, and you may not get signature sounds from the rest of the guys so much, but they're all imprinting their own style on it, but it's still a very much, you could hear Adam Duritz with a different band, and it just, to me, wouldn't be as compelling as Adam Duritz. It's just, but the Counting Crows is just a
Cool. Yeah, because I think that people like us or people that sort of musicians that will learn the songs of Counting Crows, you know what his name is, Adam Duritz. But a lot of people that like know about Mr. Jones and all, when they got famous with Counting Crows, they just think about it as Counting Crows. It's they hear his voice and they think Counting Crows.
Right.
They don't think Adam Duritz, I think.
I don't think they think that. I mean, people may know it if they really follow them a lot, but for the most part, a lot of people may not know his name necessarily. They know his face or something.
It's Counting Crows, yeah.
But it's Counting Crows. That's what you.
Well, I think of Northern Point. I never think of Chuck Clough.
Well. I never do. I never think of Chuck Clough ever. Well, yeah.
Everyone listening to this is like, what the heck? Because Northern Point is that like is that near
Northern Point? Malin
is that near Malin?
Malin.
It's the southernmost point of the Northern.
I've never realized that before.
There's something there. It's all coming together now. So it's a really great album. I've said that to you maybe, you know.
Never?
Well, maybe like I thought it and never actually said it out loud.
Thank you.
But it is a great album.
I've said it. I've never thought it, but I've said it.
I know you use the mouth first for the brain.
And it is really good. But you know what? Awesome. One of the things I wanted to talk about other than just like, you know, your chronology.
We covered that tonight.
I
thought I wouldn't have anything
to talk
about.
We went back to you as a little boy.
I'm ready for a part two.
And it is a great story, you know, coming over from Ireland and you know, spending your time
making it in America.
Yes, exactly. It's a great story. But
make America great again.
But you know, right now we kind of talked. We did a State of the Union of the podcast before everyone came here.
Do I get to hear that?
And we talked. You'll hear. Yes, episode 10.
Got to download it.
So I got to follow a State of the Union? I don't get like, you know, a nice opener like Britt Connors or...
What do you mean nice opener?
I thought it'd be amazing to follow, you know, Britt or someone like that. I don't want to follow two dudes.
You were the beginning of our second 10.
Okay. Yeah.
You're kind of like one, except that you're 10 more.
You're sort of like the next
10?
Chapter.
You've done 10 before me?
This is our 11th.
This is our 11th. Oh. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I meant you're just two dudes talking with no guest.
It was just us two, yes. No guest.
That was number 10? We were
one guest. That was number 10.
Okay.
We do it every 10th.
I thought I was silver medal. Now I'm down to bronze?
I don't know. This is going into weird places. But what I wanted to talk about is, you know, something that is we talk about a lot when we're in the studio together. We're all in the studio right now. We're at Woolly Mammoth Studio with Sir David Minahan. Mm-hmm. We're doing our EP. To kind of simplify like where we're all coming from musically, whether it's right or not, we've kind of said like, oh, I'm kind of folky. You're kind of, Ron is kind of jazzy, and you're more pop oriented. But, you know, that's the kind of sensibility we're kind of coming from. I was very, you know, the covers I would do was like David Gray stuff, and, you know, it was kind of the Northern Point stuff is very acoustic oriented. Do you consider yourself more pop oriented?
Yeah.
Because we kind of label you like that.
But pop's a wide thing. But for me, it's like if I could be writing songs like Squeeze, Elvis Costello, you know, and even right up to Killers, all that kind of stuff. That's just, I hear that stuff. I'm like, I want to be in that band.
I think it's rock. Great. It's pop. It's pop rock. Yeah. It's, I don't know.
Yeah, it's
rock.
It's if you listen to when people finally get this EP, when it finally comes out, it's a mix of all three of those. I mean, the origins, me and you wrote a lot of them before we went into the studio. Ron and I wrote a lot of them. And then when you added your stuff to it, you added more structure to it. You'd be like, no, this has to go somewhere else now.
Because I'm ready for the bridge. I'm first in a chorus, first in a chorus. What's going on? Let's get somewhere else.
Yeah. So you added a lot of structure to it.
3 minutes.
But it did add a lot of, you know, you added that kind of pop sensibility. Now, so do you go, when you go into the studio, when you went in with us, when you went in by yourself, was that a thought process? Is that just who you are?
Doing the stuff for the Frogs was totally different and relaxing different, like a good way in that I just, you can't have enough studio experience, right? Everyone's different. But with my own stuff, it's just pressure. It's all you. If it's not performing, it's all you. And you keep reminding yourself of that. And I find it's a good pressure, but it's a lot of pressure. Mm. Doing the current project with the Frogs is so much more enjoyable. Not necessarily, you know, better or worse, but it's like all I've got to do here is support these songs, put a producer head on, like pull things in, pull things out. And then get textures on them and get to use all these effects and these other things that Corey did on my record. I'm trying to do it on other people, you know, and I'm trying to do it in the Frog stuff. And I got a kick out of, I was listening to it recently with somebody and they said, oh, are those keys? I'm like, no, that's actually like a guitar swell. You know, it's like, okay, I've now painted a bit of color that's helped and supported one of the songs there. So it's a different mindset, but I could do both of the things all over again.
Are you saying you don't need me anymore for kids?
Well,
yeah, I think that's what we're saying.
That new Hammond organ pedal is pretty sweet.
Well, because you add your stamp, whether it's DGM or Mellon or whoever, you know, what kind of sort you're going with. You add the stamp as a friend and as a collaborator, because we're in a band, but we're kind of just putting songs together. That we know each other as guys, too. I thought that that was an interesting thing about the Frog sessions, is that we're trying to be meticulous, trying to do it. We want it to sound professional. Yeah. We want it very good. But at the same time, we're all playing live together. It's just like, we're about the Frogs. Great. You know, there was less pressure because of that.
Yeah.
So, all right, so we're coming up on almost an hour here. But so we want you to play a couple songs first. Yeah. But before we do that, what is the next thing as far as like you as a solo guy, you as Mellon, you as...
You know, I don't know. I really am waiting for something to bite. I actually talked to John last week on the phone. And I said, you know, John, I've got nothing. Like, I'm not, you know, there's nothing really going. And the next day, I'm like, ooh, this could be a song.
It never stops.
Creativity, yeah.
Yeah. But it's a case of, I feel like the first record was meant something to me in the fact that, oh, I can do it. I can put together six songs and release them as an EP. The second one is like, oh, I can do it. I can put together a full record. I can get, you know, some of Nashville's finest in to work on it. And it sounds, you know, I'm not speaking for my own parts, but the rest of it sounds amazing. But now I think I want to write and record more songs. I'm not in the space of doing that right now, but I think if I do another original album, it'll probably be in my basement, just trying to, can I do it for free? Because doing it for money is great, and I think I've done that, but yeah. It's just impossible to get it back unless some incredible piece of luck happens, and it shouldn't all be for money anyway, but... You know, I just don't feel like I want to invest that much in a record again, because, you know, if you keep doing it and don't cover it, then you're kind of going crazy in a way. But I like the way we've done it with the Frogs. And if I can do something like that if I can basically take every bit of gear I've got, use it, put it together with a new set of songs and record it as Mellon, that's great.
Technology nowadays, you can make something that you actually like and sound good.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and then go to Woolly Mammoth or work with Dave and just get some production help. And you know, if your home vocal mic isn't good enough, you can rent a studio for a day and try out those $10,000 microphones. And that's why, you know, I think all these hybrid projects, basement and studio, that's where.
I mean, if you step back from what you've done, you may not notice it, but it's different.
Getting you there.
You've done you did the Jonas A album. You did your very very first album, solo album by yourself, and I've done something like that. Not a solo album, it's my first band album there. Then you did that third album, the
High Tide Adventures.
High Tide Adventures, which was a totally different direction for you as far as like what your goals were for that.
Yeah.
Then you also wrote for Brit. You wrote that great song.
The Jazzy on the Side. Yeah,
fantastic.
That's
song.
The same week as Bullfight. That's what always cracks me up. I was doing some lead guitar for her band, and I just got her voice stuck in my head, and then I just always wanted to hear her singing that Nora Jonesy style thing, and boom, that came. And then a week later, Bullfight came out. I'm like, these are like, where did this come from?
Yeah.
Like, jazzy and kind of Latin.
But as a writer, it's kind of a neat thing to have someone do your song, like, and you wrote it for her to sing.
Yeah.
It's not, you know, so it's kind of,
that's like the other song you wanted to do, cold. That cowboy song we wanted to do.
Yeah, Silver Spur Cowboy. Yeah,
we got a good iPhone version of that too.
But
I mean, that's the thing, that's the greatest. I mean, you don't know what you're going to do next.
Yeah.
But
I think I want to see, you know, we might get busy. Like, if we get the Frogs thing out there, talk of a name change, maybe not, maybe the same. But
new direction for
we
the Frogs.
Will have work, and that might be enough.
Original
given that we're
stuff.
All doing daytime stuff.
It's inspiring.
So.
Yeah.
Well, I know. So we want to hear some music from you. But I did want to point out, too, is that you actually went away from a day job for a while.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think we covered that. Where that you actually went all in, which is a very sort
to
of
record,
you know,
the
great
time
opportunity.
To write. Yeah. And also practice. Which is one that we
and
don't
it shows
talk
in
about,
the album. It shows how crisp and how you know, it's a meticulously, professionally played, great hits, great tunes, and you dove in. You know, you had to.
Yeah. That's why I think that's what almost scares me, is where the bar is for the next one.
I think
it has to be different, because I can't, unless I've got major funding, I can't go and beat that one sonically or with that team.
You know what, though,
but I just got to write different songs and maybe do like these people that come out of their basements with something just as incredible. That's what I think.
She could go above the basement.
The piano.
You know, but the point is, though, is no matter how much time and money you put into it, the songwriter is the same. So, I mean, you can have more time to write songs, but sometimes if you're busy, you can write a hit.
Well, you know, ask a busy man, right? That's the expression. I don't know if you guys heard it in Northern Ireland. That was an expression growing up. Ask a busy man. If you want something done, ask a busy man.
Yeah, don't ask a...
Because if you're sitting around with loads of time, I never find. But if you got to squeeze it in between 16 other things, you have more chance of getting it done and finished.
Ask a busy man. I haven't heard that one. I like it.
That's
Butler Frogs. Record.
Ask a busy man.
Ask a busy man. So where can we find you on the interwebs?
iTunes. So Malin Music, Malin-Music.
Malin-music.com.
It goes everywhere.
It goes to all.
And it goes to my records on iTunes, yeah.
And you also, on Facebook, on iTunes, CD Baby, yep. All those places.
Skyping and Twittering.
So everyone should check out
Instagramming and all
both
the rest
of those albums, Never the First to Jump and High Tide Adventures.
Yeah, let's do
Shlomi
it.
Shlomi has been sitting here very patiently.
You're going to have your brother-in-law is going to play with you. What are you going to play for us?
We're going to play one off one and one off the other.
All right. I like it.
You guys might recognize some of these. This is Goodbye Before the Sun. It's been seven times or more. You come crashing through my door. We cast our cares aside and end up on. And we're still here. The coffee drowns the taste of beer. Another sunny day and doubts all disappear. Oh no, look what we've become. Oh no, we should have said goodbye before the sun. You come stumbling through my door, and this routine's become a bore. We've both forgotten what we really came here for. Morning brings another fight. There's no pretending this is right. And all the colors fade and the sun bleached out to white, white, white. Oh no, look what we've become. Oh no, we should have said goodbye before the sun.
Shouldn't fake it. We should have seen.
So that is our show for today. Thanks to David for the great songs and conversation, and also to Shlomi Bliss for his guitar accompaniment. Be sure to visit David's website at malin-music.com, and you can also purchase David's music from all his bands on iTunes and CD Baby. Check out our own website at abovethebasement.com, where you can sign up for our newsletter, listen and subscribe to our podcast, like our Facebook page, follow us on Twitter, and look at all the nice pictures we post on Instagram. We are everywhere. On behalf of Ronnie and myself, thanks for listening. Tell your friends, and remember, Boston music, like its history, is unique.